Okay, we are in the book of Genesis, so you can turn there, Genesis chapter 4. Really just getting started in the book of Genesis, but excuse me. Last time, I know I wasn't here last week, but last time we, in the chapter 4, talks about Cain and Abel and that situation there that we talked about, Cain's desire to do things his own way. And we know, according to Scripture, that obviously there is only one way to approach God, right? There is only one way, and it's either that way or it doesn't work. And that's what happened in Cain's situation. It says that he was very wroth or upset that his way didn't work. And we talked about this situation. And then as we continue on, verse 8 and 9, it talks about Cain talked with Abel and took whatever opportunity he had and slew his brother. God obviously knows what's going on and said to Cain, where is Abel your brother? This is about where we left off last week. Where's Abel your brother? Is that because God didn't know? No, obviously. God knew where Abel was and had knew what took place and what the situation was. Again, looking for a response from Cain. Maybe realizing that he had done wrong and an admission of guilt. That's what God desires when we do wrong, right? I mean, after all, what did Cain do here? He let sin get the best of him. Anybody here ever let sin get the best of you? Sure, because we have a sin nature and we're not perfect and we sin, just like Cain sinned. And God comes to us and wants us to confess that wrongdoing and admit our guilt and receive forgiveness. I don't see any reason why if Cain hadn't confessed his wrongdoing that God wouldn't have forgiven him in one way. Doesn't mean there wouldn't have been consequences, but as we look at this verse 9, we see that what does Cain do? Where's Abel your brother? And Cain says, the first thing he says is what? I don't know. Whoa, wait a minute. You were the last one to see him alive. You know exactly where he is and exactly what's going on. Yet the first thing out of his mouth is, oh, I don't know. Huh? A lie. Have we seen this take place already in the book of Genesis? Sure. A lie. What's the first thing sometimes we do when we're caught guilty of doing something wrong? Oh, nope. I didn't do that. Right? Sometimes we do that as well. Nope, it wasn't me. Ever have your kids say that? Those of you who have children. Oh, wasn't me. Who put that there? Wasn't me. Well, somebody put it there because there's only, you know, whatever, so many of us in the house and it didn't just, that peanut butter and jelly sandwich didn't just fly over there by itself.
I have another child. It's called
it. Yeah. It must have been somebody else. So we do that as well. Try to avoid the admission of guilt. God goes on and says, or he says, first off, I know not, an outright lie. And then he says to God, am I my brother's keeper? In this statement, am I my brother's keeper, what's Cain actually saying? Is this just a simple statement of, again, like, I don't know? Well, could be, not my problem. I think actually it's more like, what right do you have to ask me? I see Cain being a little, I mean, obviously he's upset about his offering and that didn't work out. And so I'm sure there's some anger here. Isn't that sometimes the next step that seems to take place when somebody's caught guilty? Well, what right do you have to ask me? Right? And that's basically what he's saying here. What gives you right to ask me where he is? I don't know where he is. I'm not supposed to take care of him. I'm not my brother's keeper. Well, yes, you are. But oftentimes when people are confronted with guilt, that seems to be their reaction. First, lying, no, I'm not guilty. And then, what right do you have to come to me? The world tends to do this when they're confronted with their guilt as well, right? Ever have someone react when you're sharing the gospel with them this way? In anger? Because they don't know how else to avoid the situation and they don't want to be confronted. I see this Cain here doesn't want to be confronted. I don't want to admit it. I don't want to be confronted. What right do you have to me to come to me? And God has given him this opportunity, as he gives us, to admit guilt. And Cain basically says, I'm not going to admit it. I don't want anything to do with it. What right do you have to confront me? And so God's response then turns from that of mercy, which obviously he would offer to Cain, to judgment. As we continue on, verse 10, and he said, what hast thou done? Again, another question. God knew exactly what he had done, right? But even here, he asks the question and gives Cain an opportunity to answer, but we see no answer. The voice of thy brother's blood crieth out unto me from the ground. The ground is interesting. Mankind at this point made their living from what? The ground. That supplied their needs, food that they grew from the ground. the ground was cursed in Adam's curse as well. But he says, goes on to say here, and now art thou cursed from the earth which hath opened her mouth to receive thy brother's blood in thy hand. When thou tillest the ground, it shall not henceforth yield unto thee her strength, and a fugitive and a vagabond shalt thou be in the earth. What was Abel known for? Remember Abel, the brother that was killed? What did Abel do? He what? Tended sheep, tended the flock. Who was the one that was the farmer? Cain. And God says to Cain, not only because of Adam's curse will the ground not provide like it did, but now even what you took pride in, actually the pride that caused you to fall, that's what it was, right? It was pride. I want to do it my way. I don't want to bring the offering that you said. This is my work. This is what I did. You should accept it because this is the best that I made. There's a lot of eyes in that, right? Because that's basically what it was. Cain's pride took over, and he didn't get it under control because God said, sin lieth at the door, and if you don't take control, it's going to take control of you. It's waiting to pounce if you don't take control over sin, and that's what took place. Cain's pride finally got to him and caused him to kill his brother, to not admit it, to come to this point in his life. Excuse me. But the same pride that caused Satan's fall, right? Pride. We got to be careful because of pride in our lives. So, when you till the ground, it's not going to henceforth yield like it used to. You're used to it bringing forth fruit. You were talented in that area. You were a farmer. This was your living. And now it's not going to work anymore like it used to. And a fugitive and a vagabond shalt thou be in the earth. Interesting here. How many farmers do you know that basically wander around and travel a lot? It doesn't work like that, does it? You can't plant crops here and then travel over there and expect to reap the crops that you worked on over here, right? So his whole life is upended here in what he understands because of the curse, because of what the punishment, the consequences for what he's done. So you're going to be a fugitive and a vagabond, thou shalt be in the earth. You're going to wander. No home. And we'll get to something that takes place here. So anyhow, what does Cain say? Verse 13. Oh, woe is me. Oh, I can't handle it. You're too harsh with me. The punishment is greater than I can bear. Oh, I'm the victim here. Really? What? Yeah? Yeah. Yep. Bonnie Jo. Yeah. Yep. Oh, I'm the victim here. I need mercy, even though I'm, didn't provide any mercy to anybody for what I did. Actually, punishment here can also be translated iniquity. Some have suggested that maybe he's understanding the guilt that he's feeling at this point, and he feels like that guilt is too much for him to bear. Either way, he's looking to himself and the consequences that he doesn't want to have to deal with because of his actions. And verse 14, and behold, thou hast driven me out this day from the face of the earth, and from thy face shall I be hid. Interesting here, again, this statement, from your face I'm going to be hid. Doesn't seem to indicate that Cain's got any remorse or admission of guilt or desire for forgiveness for what he's done. I'm sure if at some point he were to seek God's face that God would, right, listen, but it doesn't sound like he has any desire for that. From thy face shalt I be hid. I shall be a fugitive and a vagabond in the earth, and it shall come to pass that everyone that findeth me shall slay me. Oh, my goodness. Now I don't want anybody to take revenge upon me. I need protective custody, even though I'm the guilty one, is kind of what he's saying here. Interesting. Verse 15, and the Lord said unto him, therefore, whoever slayeth Cain, vengeance shall be taken upon him sevenfold. And the Lord set a mark upon Cain, lest any finding him should kill him. What do we see here? What does God do? Pardon me? Okay. Mercy. Grace. What did Cain deserve? Not what God provided for him, not a form of protection that people wouldn't take revenge upon him. So even in this circumstance, we see God's mercy and God's grace upon a sinner, Cain. It's a good thing God shows his mercy and grace, doesn't it? Because without it, we're pretty well sunk. But even in this circumstance, God shows his mercy to Cain and says, I'm going to set a mark. And again, there's been a whole discussion about what the mark is. Was it a mark on him physically? Was it? Actually, it's interesting. Look up that word mark, and it means it could be a flag, a beacon, an omen, a token, a monument, something. The idea is something obvious that people understand about Cain that they're not to kill him, take revenge upon him for what he did, whatever it was. It doesn't matter what it was. The point is God showed his mercy and his grace to Cain at this point by giving him some type of mark or sign, whatever you want to think it is. We don't know. It doesn't really matter. That he would be protected in this way. As I thought about this, Cain says, my punishment or iniquity, we talked about that, is possibly the guilt he felt for what he had done. Do you think that Adam and Eve, when this took place, sat and pondered the consequences for what they had done? I mean, this is obviously a direct effect of what they had done, sin in the world. You think they thought about that every time something took place that was evil? I mean, we know that Adam lived 900 and some odd years. We'll get to that shortly. So he saw, obviously, quite a few generations. They saw mankind develop, or I should say, how would you say, develop backwards? You know, the fall of man, they weren't progressing better and better. They were getting worse and worse. And Adam and Eve could see this over generation after generation after generation. The fall of mankind directly because of what they had done. Just something interesting to think about, if they ever considered that. Verse 16, so we see what Cain did. So Cain went out from the presence of the Lord and dwelt in the land of Nod. Where's the land of Nod? Don't know. East of Eden. That's all we know, is he went east into some place called Nod. Nod actually means, guess what? To wander. That's what the meaning of that word is. Verse 17, and Cain knew his wife, and she conceived and bare Enoch. We're going to stop there for a minute. Big controversy here. Where did Cain find a wife? Must have been a sister, right? Yes, it was a sister. There's different things that I've read in studying through here. Some people want to say that Adam and Eve weren't the first individuals that God made, or when God made mankind, that he made a group of people, and therefore Cain could draw from that group of people, so there's no intermarriage in the family. Later on, God says this practice has got to stop. This is no longer acceptable. Basically, why is that? Because of gene mutation, when there's involvement within family members together. We know that, obviously, the world is dying, right? Like it or not, we're dying slowly. Adam and Eve started to die from the time they ate of that fruit. That death process took place. It wasn't immediate, but it was a process that's taking place. The mutation of genes and the deterioration of mankind has gotten to the, got to the place, I think it's by chapter 9, where God says this is no longer going to take place. But that mutation of genes was not, obviously, had not gotten that far that there was a problem with this. So, yes, that's the answer. He married his sister, and end of question, right? That's all there is to it. interesting here. He knew his wife, and she conceived and bare Enoch. And he what? And Cain did what? He built a city and named it after his son Enoch. I'm scratching my head here. Wait a minute. God said you're going to what? You're going to wander. And Cain did what? He built a city. If you're building a city, are you wandering? Nope. Again, I see no remorse in Cain for what he had done. As a matter of fact, I see more rebellion in Cain in the fact that at some point in time he decided to build a city. I'm not going to move anymore like you told me I'm going to. I'm not going to wander. I'm going to build a city. Yeah. Yep. What's another thing you get when you build a city? You, obviously, a city is for who to dwell in. Multiple people, right? When you're dealing with a group, well, when you're out on your own, taking care of yourself is 100% up to you, right? If you're out wandering in the wilderness, you have to take care of your food and your shelter and providing whatever you need. When you live in a city, all of a sudden, you can go down to the local Meijer and you can get your groceries. You don't have to go out and plant or provide or whatever, right? And if you need something fixed, you go to the shoe repair guy to fix your shoes instead of you having to figure out a way to fix your shoes yourself. You understand what I'm saying? It's easier when you live in a city, right? Maybe this is part of this as well. I'm trying to ease the difficulty that God has put upon me by living in a city where I can get some help, others can help me. You know, we can mutually benefit from the fact that we all live together. Maybe, maybe not, but interesting to consider as well. But the fact that he did build a city is a fact that we have here. verse 18, and unto Enoch was born Irad, and Irad begat Mahujael, and Mahujael begat Methusel, and Methusel begat Lamech. We're going to stop there for a minute. It's interesting in these names here, and I don't know that this is specifically this many generations, could be. Why were these specific individuals named? I'm sure that Enoch had more than one son or more than one child, but these certain individuals are named quite possibly because of the connection with Lamech, who we'll talk about in a minute here, another descendant of Cain, and his lifestyle. Interesting, though, you notice that two of these names end in E-L. You see that? E-L is God. It's possible that even in the descendants of Cain, there were those who still believed in God. I don't know if they openly practiced worship of God or not, but just because Cain and most of his descendants, it seems like, were anti-God doesn't mean that they all were. Interesting here that God's name is put in here. One means God lives and the other means man of God. Just an interesting piece of information here in the descendants of Cain. So we come to Lamech. Maybe one of the most famous individuals in the descendants of Cain. Unfortunately, he's known for his defiance and rebellion of God. So verse 19, and Lamech took unto himself what? Two wives. Defiance of God's order of things. Again, an open defiance of God's order. We see in Lamech. Took himself two wives. The name of one was Ada, and the name of the other was Zillah. And Ada bore Jabal. He was the father of such as dwell in tents and of such as have cattle. So one of the sons of one of his wives' name was Jabal. He was the father of those who dwelt in tents. So apparently, if you dwell in a tent, you dwell in a tent because you're moving, right? Otherwise, you'd build a house, right? Most of you dwell in houses. We have a trailer. We like camping. Camping is like living, well, it's like living in a fancy tent. Sorry, it's not a tent. But because we're in that because we're going from place to place to place, or we leave home and we go to some place and stay for a period of time. Tent seems to indicate some mobility. Otherwise, you'd live in a house or in the city. So some descendants of him were still mobile. interesting here, it says, dwell in tents and as such as have cattle. Cattle? Well, cattle could mean goats or camels or mules or actually cattle. So you could use the goats for milk. You could use the camels for riding on. If it's actually talking about cattle, that would be interesting. Why would you keep cattle? I mean, we saw the sheep that Abel kept, but... Could be for pagan worship. And not that it's specifically related, but what do people keep cattle for nowadays? Food. Milk them, yeah, you could milk cows if it's cattle, though. Just an interesting thought. Did they begin eating meat, the descendants of Cain, because they kept cattle? I don't know. I'm not saying they did. It's just interesting here, the statement that they kept cattle, that is a possibility. God hadn't approved of that yet, had he? So it wouldn't surprise me if...
Well, if their farming wasn't doing so good.
Well, yeah. And again, in a way that God hadn't approved. But anyhow, verse 21, and his brother's name was Jubal. The father of all is such handle a harp and an organ. So he was a musician. Made music. Harp and organ, stringed instruments, wind instruments, whatever. He was a musician and probably passed that on down to his children and offspring. So, and then the next one in verse 22, and Zillah, she also bare Tubal-Cain, an instructor in every artificer in brass and iron. And the sister of Tubal-Cain was Naamah. I'm not sure exactly why Naamah's in here, but so Tubal-Cain was a, an artist. He dealt in copper and metal, iron, brass, I guess copper and metal, iron and brass specifically, maybe metallurgy, maybe like a blacksmith makes things out of metal. What's something that you make out of metal? Weapons. What's something else you make out of metal? Pardon me?
False idols,
okay. What? Pardon me? Tools. I use tools all my life. You use tools. Every day you use a tool. At some point, a spoon, a fork, or a knife is a tool, right? So if you're creating tools, again, tools are made to what? Make life easier, right? Interesting here that the development seems to be to make things easier. In other words, to ease that curse that's been put upon us because of the consequences of our sin. interesting here. We've talked about evolution several times in the book of Genesis and how obviously Genesis contradicts evolution. Evolution says that, like Pastor likes to say, you know, slime crawled out of the pit and became eventually an ape and then a man. Evolution says that man developed civilization and these improvements when? Millions and millions and millions of years down the road. Genesis says what? That mankind was intelligent and developed civilization and tools and metallurgy and instruments and music and poetry and all these things early on. Interesting that evolution tries to say that man is getting better, and Scripture tells us exactly the opposite. Adam and Eve were made perfect, and we've fallen a long way from that, haven't we? Yep. yes. Yes, we'll get into. I see the buzzer. We'll get into that name later on. But I know the buzzer just rang. And because of that, we're going to stop right there and not go over. But we'll see interesting things that are involved with the line of Cain, and then the contrast when we get to the line of Adam and Seth, his other descendants. Hopefully this has been a blessing to you this morning. Lord bless you. You're dismissed today.